Blog Talk Radio.
Are you ready to take a bite out of the competition? Are you looking for ideas to make your business better? Welcome to the Core Business Show with Tim Jacquet.
Sponsored by Apple Capital Group.
At the core of every successful business, you'll find people making a difference. And with each episode of the Core Business Show, we talk with those people, examine those ideas, and explore the strategies that make them special. Now, the host of the Core Business Show, Tim Jacquet.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Core Business Show with Tim Jacquet. Today, I have the pleasure of having Danny Kosky, who wrote Financial Wisdom, How to Live Wealthy with Little Money. If you have any questions, please call in at 347-324-3460. Danny, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tim. Thanks so much for having me on.
I guess to begin with, kind of tell us about yourself. You're an elementary school teacher, so kind of tell us, how did you come about writing a book?
All right. Yes, I am currently a special education teacher in the elementary school setting. This is my 12th year teaching. I've actually also taught pre-K, kindergarten, first grade, second grade before venturing into the special education field. But it was about 7 years ago, I guess, that I wrote my first book, How to Survive and Perhaps Thrive on a Teacher's Salary. And that came about, we had, and colleagues would say to Tracy, my wife and myself, that we did well, and Tracy was a school teacher before becoming a stay-at-home mom when we had children, but they said, we did things differently than most people, and, you know, the urging this came like in the early 2000s when we lived a lot, differently than other people were. That's when most people weren't thinking about tomorrow. We were spending everything had coming in, weren't planning for the future, whereas we had our eyes on the goal of having Tracy be able to stay at home and us be able to make it on a teacher's salary, which I'll tell you right now, it's a little, here in Georgia, it's about I make about $42,000 a year. So definitely, I mean, it's hard to complain, but I know it's 42 grand, I think most people would agree, is a moderate level income. So that was kind of the urging for my first book. It's just kind of, it was our story on how we got to the point where we were able to make it on one teacher's salary. Now, fast forward, about 5 years later, and this was in December of 2010, is when I started my current book, A Simple Book of Financial Wisdom, Teach Yourself and Your Kids How to Live Wealthy with Little Money. And that kind of came about because in those 5 years between the first and the second book, I felt like as a family, we had learned so much about money and how to handle it. Still continue to live off a teacher's salary. We actually added another child to the mix. We had two daughters. And despite that, living off a moderate income, we have no debt except our mortgage. We invest for our retirement each month. We have an emergency fund in place. But basically, I feel like we live a pretty wealthy life on a moderate income because we have the freedom to pursue those passions that we want to, even though they don't pay much. In Tracy's case, it didn't pay anything to be a stay-at-home mom. And in my case, it's not a large salary as a school teacher. But I just wanted another book out there that wasn't geared specifically towards a target audience for my first book. I think the tips could help some, but the teachers were in mind, whereas my next book, the one that's currently out, it's kind of, it'll give general advice to anyone, and then it breaks it down to some specifics too, but I wanted to be able to give hope to people right now. We are going through a tough time, most people are, economically speaking, and when we turn on a lot of TV shows, read in print, whatever, it's bad news, and I know bad news sells. It's definitely, that's usually the front page, but I feel also a lot of people, when they keep reading this negative news about the economy, about the job market, about housing, and they think, I'm never going to be able to do well with money. I'm always going to be a failure, and they want to give up and just throw in the towel, wave the red flag, and that's where I want to give them a different side to it and show them that, you know what, you can do well financially even if you don't make a large salary. Now, yes, there's going to be sacrifices. Yes, you're not going to be able to have it all, but I think most people are ready to make that change because I think if there is a silver lining to the economic mess our country is going through, it's that people are slowly realizing that having a lot of money is not necessarily the end-all be-all. Now, sure, it takes away a lot of worries, but I know people that make a lot more money than me, and they're miserable. They hate Monday through Friday, 9 to 5, but they're stuck in a job because they have to, because they live up to their paycheck, and there's no choice for them. And that's just kind of where I want to give a different type of story and show people that if this 36-year-old school teacher can do well, then they can too. You do not have to be an economics major. You don't have to have a bachelor's degree in finance. You know, when it comes to investing in mutual funds and different types of insurance, and obviously you're going to seek a professional that has more knowledge in those areas, but most people aren't struggling with that. Most people aren't even thinking about retirement. They're having trouble getting through this week. So that's where I hope to come in with a more positive message and to show them that if I can do it, then they can do it too.
Okay. Kind of bring us through the steps. I mean, I used to be a teacher. I did teach at an elementary level and middle school, and we would just roll over if we made 40-something thousand dollars a year. When I started, I think 1990 or 89, graduated 89. Yeah, in 1989, we were just at the point of, I think, breaking $20,000 a year.
Right.
And starting out as a starting teacher, and when that boom started retiring, we were really, really happy because the school districts projecting around the country, the bulk of the teachers who were hired in the 50s and 60s are now retirement age, and they have been teaching really for 30 years. Mm-hmm. And a lot of them was making it to 30 years and will pass that to make sure they can get as much money as possible for
right.
their retirement.
Right, right.
Especially when that bill came out with if you can't collect your Social Security, you only can collect the teacher retirement. So that
right.
pushed some people to get over 30 to make sure they had enough income that they wanted to still keep their lifestyle.
Right.
But the good part of that, if you had 30 years in, you were doing extremely well.
Mm-hmm.
And we noticed that some of these teachers were retiring off of, they were ending their the professionalism at $80,000 in some cases a year, which, you know, if they got a portion of that, it was still wonderful.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, in about the mid-90s and the late-90s, all of a sudden the increases start jumping dramatically from, you know, 5,000, and the school just start competing, which was wonderful. Then it brought the income up, and then it started tapering off within the last 5 or 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
But taking that into account today, teachers were really good at managing what they have and resources. Okay, I got 9-month pay. This is how I'm going to split it. Okay, I'm going to work during the summer. And this is how I'm going to make up the difference here. And you have to manage every single thing. How can you take in the sense of a teacher who's really, really structured, who plan lesson plans, who plan everything in life pretty much to stretch the money dollar? How did you focus that into a book? And tell us the steps that kind of give an outline, what they really need to do to prepare for that.
Well, first and foremost, and I think teachers, I mean, it does with the level of pay, we are kind of a lot of cases, and usually teachers are more of a female, it's more of a female profession because then you do usually have a husband that's in a higher paying profession. But a lot of times we do have to be very careful of how we're spending our money because there is not an infinite amount coming in. Whereas, you know, I know in some careers at business owners and things like that, that sometimes they're able to have a little bit more each month. Whereas with us, it's the same salary every single month, same type of paycheck we're getting. So that being the case, I think we do have somewhat of an advantage because it is so structured in that format. You know exactly what's coming in. Now you just got to figure out what's going out and make those changes. But I think the first thing, and this could be for anyone, is you just have to realize where you are spending your money. I have talked to people before, and they'll tell me, I have no money, I can't afford to do this or can't afford to do that, but they have the newest iPhone, or they have a new Coach bag, or they have a brand new pair of shoes, or whatever. And I'll say, well, you do have money, you're just choosing to spend it in these ways. And that's where I think coming up with a plan on knowing exactly how your money is being spent, that works wonders. And what I recommend to people, walk around with a piece of paper and a pencil for 1 month, write down everything you spend, and then at the end of the month, you're able to analyze it. It's your handwriting. You wrote down the numbers. This is your personalized spending plan, because I could go along and give you some tips right now, some general things, the way to cut back, but not everyone drinks coffee out every morning, and not everyone goes to a vending machine or whatever. But this is when you do it this way, it becomes specific to you and your spending habits. Then at the end of the month, you're able to analyze this and see exactly how that money is being spent. And a lot of times you'll find things that you just say, wow, I didn't realize I was spending money on that. An easy example of how fast this can add up, let's just say during the work week, we'll say Monday through Friday, eat lunch out every single day. We're going to keep it cheap, fast food, say $5 a pop. Most of us aren't going to think twice about spending that $5. Most of us won't even miss that $5. But when you add that up, $5 a day becomes $25 a week, which is $100 a month, which adds up to $1,300 a year. And for a lot of people, $1,300 can go a long way. And this is just on $5 a day. So a lot of people spend more than that on frivolous things. So that to me is the number one thing to do right now, is just get an idea of how that money is being spent, because there's only two ways to make more money. Either A, have to get a higher paying job, which it is possible right now, but let's face it, it's a little more difficult for most of us than it was 5 or 6 years ago with the job market being what it is. Or B, we cut back on what we're spending money on, which puts money back into our bank accounts. So that to me is probably the most important thing right now, is just analyze that. Analyze your spending plan, just like a diet. When you're doing weight loss, you analyze what you're eating, what you're putting into your body. That way you can eliminate some of those things that are going to have you gain weight. Same thing with money. You're going to eliminate some of those things that you may not need that you overspend in just to cut back. And it may not be forever, but until you get on track, it's such an important step. And like I said, there are people out there, I talk to people that make a lot more money than I do, but have nothing to show for it because they don't know where they're spending their money. And it could be a weekend here, they go shopping, do whatever, then they go to the movies or whatever. So do making a list for yourself, you personalize it, and then you have written down these numbers. So they're not lying. You did the handwriting, so then you're able to cut back where needed.
Okay. So if you take that into account, you write everything down and then can analyze what you're actually spending. Now is the fiscal discipline. How do you get yourself on course? Okay, I have my list together. I'm spending here, but how can I get myself disciplined enough the following month to stick to a budget?
Well, I think here's where the goals come into place. You have to have some short-term and long-term goals, because if you don't have a destination in mind, it's hard to get there. So I think that is where goals are a big thing. Say you may want to say, I want to retire 30 years from now, so you're able to set money aside. That money that you save each month, you can invest in mutual funds, stocks, whatever, and that will be your retirement. Or I want to go on vacation next year. Well, however much you need, let's say the vacation will cost $2,400, go ahead, $200 a month you put aside in a vacation fund. Then at the end of the year, you're going to have $2,400 for your vacation. So I do think you need both short and long-term goals, because we have to be working towards something. If you don't, if there's no goal in mind, it's very easy to give in to temptation in the here and now. So I think having something that you're looking forward to, then it will take away some of that pain, because it's not easy to say no to spend right now. I mean, all of us want to spend money. It's a natural thing. Madison Avenue spends billions of dollars every year to get it. But if we have something else that we're working towards, then it makes it a little bit easier to say no right now, because we're working towards something in the future.
Wow. And, you know, I think in society, we have all these pressures on want to buy this. Everybody's after your money, from Wall Street to Main Street to the next door neighbor to your family and your kids, who are the best closers ever, who always want. Mm-hmm. It has to be, you know, you set your goals, and you got to say no to them, and you had to say no to yourself. Is there any tips that you can offer for the average person? Say, hey, you got to say no, and what, you know, should you pinch yourself or call yourself out on it? Any tips that that you suggest that a person can do that would bring them back into reality? Because I know some people personally will float through life and don't even look at their checking account until they get a notice in the mail, because they know how much they made, they know how much they can spend. But like a generic mind, if that's making sense.
Right. No,
so I know I can't spend $1,000, but I know that my paycheck is $2,000 a month, and I know I get paid here and here, and I can float through this point, and I can float to this point, and we just live like that, and all of a sudden you look at the end of the year, oh, I made $65,000, and my bills are late.
Right. Now, I think an important step here, because most of us do – unless you're very disciplined, we usually spend up to what we make, if not more so. For a long time there, it was more than what we made. The savings rate was at a negative percent. And it just, it holds true with, we're in a house right now, say if it's a 1,500 square foot home. Once you get a raise, you get a higher paying job, most of us move to a bigger home. Then we move into a bigger one, or we always buy things. So we do, as humans, most of us will spend and live up to the lifestyle of what we have coming in. So knowing that, to me, I think an important thing to do is you have to pay yourself first. And what I mean by that is you have to have money set aside before you have a chance to see it, get used to it, and spend it. And this could be for your retirement. This could be setting up an emergency fund, depending on whatever stage you are in the steps to obtaining financial freedom. But trick yourself. Let's just say you get paid the 30th of every month, and let's just say 1 year from now you want to have, we'll say, $1,200 in an emergency fund. Well, before you have a chance to see the money, before you have a chance to touch it, automatically have $100 taken out of your account, do an automatic type of thing through your bank, put into a savings account, and that way that money's already set aside before you have a chance, before the emotions get involved, and you have a chance to spend it. Because, like I said, most of us are in the habit of spending up to what we make. So we do have to trick ourselves in a way, and that to me is not necessarily an easy way to do it, but once you get the format set up and it's automatically done, you can't spend the money because it's already taken out. And that's something similar we do right now with our retirement. Our money, the money we invest each month for our retirement, is taken out of the account. I don't have to do anything to have it come out. It's an automatic thing. And that money's deposited into our mutual funds for investments for down the road. But I don't have a chance to spend that money. I don't even get used to it because it's gone before I even, we get paid 30th of the month. It's gone by the first of the month. So I don't have a chance to even adjust and have that part of our budget. So I think that is a huge, huge factor, is just pay yourself first. And when you start off, especially when you're younger and you kind of get used to it, then you're not living up entirely to your paycheck. And even if you do, even if you blew everything else, at least you know you'd still had some money that you set aside for your savings.
Wow. When is there a cutoff time that you really think that person should start panicking and preparing for retirement?
It's hard to say because there is Social Security, and I know people right now, I personally know people that are solely dependent on Social Security, and they do okay. I mean, they're not taking trips around the world or anything, but the thing is, your life, you have to prepare. To me, you have to start preparing earlier. Now, I don't think there's a panic mode. I never think it's too late to start. I once heard someone say, the best time to plant an oak tree was 20 years ago. The next best time is this afternoon. So I kind of feel that same way about saving for retirement. If you are up there, I don't think it's ever too late. I think you can start and at least have something in it. But it would really depend on the type of lifestyle that that you're looking forward to living in your golden years. If you mm-hmm. want to take nice cruises and extensive vacations, then you're going to have a good amount of money set aside to pay for that. It's probably not going to happen on your Social Security income alone. So I don't know if there's a panic time, because I don't want people, once again, to lose the hope, and if they haven't done what they needed to do when they were younger, to just completely give up and not set anything aside. But I do think, especially if you're younger out there, I think it's compound interest is such a magical thing. And when you start when you're younger, you just have so much time to have it work for you. And with the recent stock market crash, a lot of people, they didn't diversify correctly, a lot of older people. And then when we had the stock market a few years ago drop almost half, a lot of people lost a lot of money, and then they weren't able to retire or have the retirement that they wanted. So that way, when you are starting earlier in life, then you have time to go through those things where if the stock market does crash, like for me, I'm 36. So when the stock market went down, I wasn't happy to see my IRA account not, it wasn't worth as much, but I know I have time on my side. I don't want that money for another 30 years. So I have that time to ride it out, because usually if you go historical average, stocks usually average about 10% growth each year. Now, some years they're going to be down 20%, some years they're going to be up 20%. But over time, historically, that's about what the average is. So when you have time on your side to ride out those rough storms, and then the good times roll, it'll average out to be about 10% a year. But you don't want to, at the end of, if you just start investing, say, when you're 50, Well, man, that it's a lot narrower time margin than that. You hope that you're not hitting it on a downturn because your money won't grow like it would if you had invested when you started when you were 20. So that to me is the key, is just start as early as possible. But I also feel it is never too late to start. But if you are a little bit older, say you haven't invested and you're in your 50s or 60s, you really do need to sit down with a really good trusted financial advisor, because you have to make sure that you are somewhat diversified, a little bit more so than someone that is younger that can invest a little more heavily in stocks because of the risk factor, and you don't want to lose all of your money when you're nearing retirement.
Okay. Now, for example, how do you pick a good financial planner? How can you trust someone? I think you won't get the Bernie Madoffs. I mean, we have systems in place as long as they have some credentials and you can verify. Mm-hmm. Am I not running to that? But what do you advise a person when they sit down with a financial planner, what they really need to do, what they need to expect out of that person, and how can they trust them?
Right. Well, first, I would most of us in our lives, we have someone that we look up to that we think does a good job with money in their life. Mm-hmm. And what I would do is offer to take that person out for a cup of coffee, lunch, whatever, and just kind of pick their brains and ask, okay, who do you use for your retirement, Tom? What financial advisor? And just kind of pick their brains on that. And then I would go and interview that advisor. You're almost like you're the one hiring them. And you may not just want to stick with that one. You may want to interview a few different financial advisors, and just you'll know. A lot of times you can know in your gut, and just you can ask some specific questions of what, tell them what your life goals are. This is what I want to do. This is where I see myself in 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, and just go over those things with that person and just see which one gives you the best type of advice that you're most comfortable with. You can also do some research. There is now on the internet, you can do a lot of different researches to find out their credentials, make sure there's no complaints against that person. But to me, you just have to make sure that person, specific to what your goals are in life, that person is going to advise you based on what you want. Because you do have to remember that the person that cares the most about your money is that one that stares back at you in the mirror each day. So you do have to keep that in mind. And it is hard, and I know, because we do read all the horror stories of Bernie Madoffs and some of these CEOs of companies that definitely hurt people, and unfortunately, people are always going to get taken advantage of. There's always bad people out there that are going to do that, so you do have to be as knowledgeable as possible, but I do think interviewing a few different people, discussing what you want your life to look like, and then doing a little bit of investigation, maybe picking up a book, reading a couple articles about it, just so you have some general knowledge going into it, and then just kind of keep up with that person. If you do choose to select a certain advisor, then you should at least once a year be able to go in and sit down and talk with that person and discuss how your mutual funds are working, your stocks are working, and in the direction that you're moving forward in. But it does, and this is where a lot of people, it's hard because, you know, you mentioned there's people that don't even balance their checkbooks. If you're not even going to do something as simple as that, a lot of people don't take the time to invest their time in learning a little bit about stocks and mutual funds and those types of things. And that's why a lot of people did get hurt, you know, with someone like Bernie Madoff, because of a lack of knowledge. And unfortunately, there are people out there that are going to take advantage of those that don't know much. So this is something where you do have to take a little personal accountability and read a couple of books. And you don't have to be an expert. Like I said, have a four-year degree in finance. I don't. But I know enough through reading and doing a little research that I know enough to where I can talk with someone and understand. It's not like a foreign language. I can at least get the gist of what they're saying. So I think this is where you do have to do that a little bit. And like I said, you don't have to know everything, but you want a little basic knowledge just so you have the tools to prepare you properly.
Okay. Why did you decide to write another book about money?
Well, I just, over time, you know, with the economic downturn and people struggling so much, that is kind of where the other book came into mind. I do feel like my first book, it's an okay book. I think we should be able to improve on anything in life. As a teacher, I naturally feel that way. So I do feel like my second book is much better than the first one. But I just felt I had so much more knowledge to share. And as I mentioned before, times really, they are still tough for a lot of people. And they really got bad a couple of years ago. And I just kept hearing all these people, these desperate stories of people struggling and saying, there's no way I can do it. I don't make enough money. And that was kind of the motivation behind the second book, is just to hopefully help them and give them that light to say, yes, you can do it. No, you're not going to be able to continue living the way that you are right now. But the good news is it's possible. And that was definitely the motivation behind it. It's just to give people some hope, because a lot of people right now are struggling. And talking about, you know, opening your own business, I know this economic downturn has created a lot of entrepreneurs, and that's kind of, to me, a cool thing, that when you're able to step outside of your everyday life, and a lot of people weren't doing jobs that they really felt passionate about, that felt had meaning for them, they were doing them for a paycheck only. And when you're able, I don't want someone to lose their job, but we did have a lot of people go into business for themselves, starting to do something that they really love and they really enjoy. And when you're able to do that, you don't always need a higher salary, a higher paycheck to give you that sense of happiness, because on a daily basis, you're doing something that you feel is meaningful. And I think there is a positive to the slump that we're in, is people, they are slowly realizing that gotcha, if you're doing something every day, you get to wake up and go to a job that you enjoy and that you're helping someone, and you feel this is what God has put you on earth to do, you don't really need a large paycheck. Now, yeah, it's nice to have it. You're able to buy more things, but some point in time, you know, buying things, it becomes old after a while. It doesn't always give people that sense of satisfaction. So we're one of the richest countries on earth, yet thousands of people seek professional help every single year because they are unhappy. So it just kind of goes to show that money, yes, it takes away a lot of worries and it's nice to have, but it's not the end-all be-all to true contentment or true happiness. And I think that if there is a silver lining, like I said, it's that people have realized that and they are starting to go into careers that have more of a sense of purpose for them. And then to me, it makes this world a better place.
Wow. How do you feel like a lot of people in financial trouble today is just mainly because they're not balancing their checks, or they're spending too much time on Wall Street or Main Street? Or what do you think is the core of the problem?
I think a lot of people don't want to know the truth. Like I said, some people, there are people out there that will take advantage of you, no doubt. But at the same token, a lot of people do things knowing that it's not good for them, but they continue to do them. For instance, with home prices, I could have, as a school teacher, I could have bought a home for $300,000 if I wanted to. I know I could have been qualified. Now, it wouldn't have been. I wouldn't have had the right financing. But years ago, when they were writing these exotic loans, I know I could have. Now, I would have probably 5 years had an arm. It would have adjusted. I would have been foreclosed upon because I could not afford that house. Most people knew that. Deep down inside, most of us knew, you know, when we were signing on the dotted lines, we couldn't really afford it, but we didn't want to face up to it and face reality. We do get caught up in a culture of wanting to live up to the Joneses. We think our neighbor has it all and we want to be like them. So I think that played a huge, huge part in it, is just keeping up with others, but also not really wanting to admit the truth. And I do think a lot of people right now, they're unhappy in some area of their life, whether it's spiritually, emotionally, with their spouse, with their job, whatever. And they turn to buying things. They look at money and it brings them happiness. Buying things, going out, buying a new outfit, buying a new car, jewelry, whatever, it brings you a sense of happiness. However, it only lasts for a little while. And then we're in this vicious cycle of having to constantly buy things to bring us that false sense of happiness. If I go out and buy a brand new shirt, the first 5 or 6 times I wear it, it feels good. But after a while, that feeling of newness goes away. And if I base my sense of satisfaction or happiness on that materialistic item, man, I'm in for a long haul of having to buy things to fuel myself. So that's where I think a lot of people, they just got caught up in that. In Madison Avenue, like I mentioned, they spend a lot of money. I read a recent article that the average American, by the time they hit 21, will have been exposed to over 24 million ads. I mean, we see it all the time, and now just not on TV, but with radio, with the internet, the pop-up ads, everything. So we're exposed to a lot, too, and we think, gosh, if only I had this, I would be happy. And, yeah, it does come, but it's temporary, and then it goes away, and then we have to fuel it and buy something else. And I think that is where a lot of people just got caught up into that, and they didn't want to pay attention. We thought, gosh, we're going to get a raise every year in our job. Our homes are going to go up 10% every year. If we're in trouble, we'll be able to tap the equity, and it just doesn't happen like that. Yeah, we had a few great years where people are able to do that, but that is not normal. And I think too many people got caught up into that, thought, gosh, this is always going to be the case, when in fact it wasn't. And you talk to the older generation, they'll tell you, you need to be prepared for that rainy day. And unfortunately, many of us were caught without that umbrella when it started to rain.
Wow. Well, in closing, what advice do you have, or can you point some three things out that people really need to be aware of in order mm-hmm. to improve their financial condition?
Well, I think first and foremost is have that plan. Have a plan in place on where you want to be, what you want your life to look like 1 year from now, 5 years from now, 10 years from now, 30 years from now.
Okay.
If I were going to take a road trip from here in Georgia to California, I would consult a map. The same thing holds true with our financial lives. We need a map so we know where we're going, because it's easier to say no if we have a bigger goal in mind. It's easier to say, man, I can't go out to dinner this Friday night because I'm saving up for my vacation next summer. So once you have a goal in mind, that helps. Number two, we mentioned it before, track your spending. See where your money, your hard-earned money is going. That way you can cut some areas out. Most of us have areas in our lives that we overspend in that we really don't need to be spending money on certain things, but we do. And a lot of times it's because we're not aware of that. So that to me is the number two, is just know where that money is going and then start putting it to better use. And then number three, don't give up. Believe in yourself. Even if your parents didn't do well with money, if your grandparents didn't do well with money, if your friend can't handle money, that doesn't mean that you can't. You can handle money. You can have a positive relationship with it. Yes, it may take a change. Yes, you may disappoint a few people because misery loves company, and you may have to tell them no, you're not going to continue to make foolish mistakes. But don't believe the hype. Don't believe that you can't do it, because you can.
Wow. Well, I really appreciate you sharing that your information. And where do we find your book again?
My book is on Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com. Probably the easiest way, if you just Google search my name, my website comes up. My name is Danny Kofke, so DannyKof as in Frank, K-E. And like I said, usually the first thing that comes up is my blog page, DannyKofke.blogspot.com.
Mm-hmm.
And on that, there are direct links to my book, direct link to email me, and then also links to see some of the various media experiences I have had.
Well, great. I really appreciate you coming onto the program. And I know you had to go back and teach the kids.
There you go.
Thanks for coming on to the program real quick. Thank you for coming on your break as well. I appreciate it.
You got it. Thanks so much for having me on, Tim. I wish you continued success.
Great. Same here. Take care.
You too. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye. Again, Danny Kofke, he is the writer of the book on financial planning. So you can go ahead and reach out to him. You can also get his information on by typing his blog in. His last name is D-A-N-N-Y, first name. Last name is K-O-F-K-E. Type his name in. You can get his book, find out his book, by Financial Wisdom, How to Live Wealthy with Little Money. Also, he has another book out as well. So check both of his books out. They're available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and some other book outlets, or you can check out his website at Danny, last name K-O-F-K-E.blogspot.com, How to Survive on a Teacher's Salary, and again, his book is Simple Book, Financial Wisdom. Thank you for listening to the program. You can download this episode on Blog Talk Radio or iTunes. If you like these shows, series of shows, please go ahead and just write a review on it on iTunes to help the author out and help us out. Thank you for listening to the program, and have a great day. Thank you for listening to the show.
Thank you for listening to the Core Business Show with Tim Jacquet. For more information about equipment financing and asset-based loans, visit our website, applecapitalgroup.com. That's applecapitalgroup.com. Or call us at 866-611-7457. We hope you'll join us for our next episode. And remember, you can always get to the core via iTunes. You'll find all our previous episodes there. And thanks again for listening to The Core Business Show with Tim Jacquet.